This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, what a week we've had already. So glad you're with us. Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery is going to join us, break down what's happening in Venezuela. We got two or three, or maybe up to five destroyers off Venezuela's coast. Why? Well, the drug cartels are there. The gangs are there. And Maduro's there, this corrupt leader who refuses to leave even though he loses all these elections. And he's an enemy of America. And China is threatening us to back out. Unbelievable. In our hemisphere. Do you believe that? And Jonathan Turley is standing by. Not only is he going to stand by and tell us about what the president actually, about his decision, the decision yesterday to overturn the $500 million he owed in a civil judgment, but he's also about the raid of Ambassador Bolton's house, the former national security advisor to John Bolton, to President Trump's first term, John Bolton there. So we've seen it. They raided his office and they're raiding his house. It's still ongoing. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president obviously is recognizing this as going forward, knowing we could be in a much better place if Biden hadn't held back, one, the weapons themselves initially, and then two, how to use those weapons.
Yep, Joe Biden screwed this up from the get-go. That is General Jack Keane hours ago on Fox and Friends. Setback with Russia means Trump is ready to step up for Ukraine. We'll bring you the latest.
Number two.
They better look out. I sent 32 letters to mayors, multiple letters to these governors. They say that we're trying to tell them how to do their jobs. Yeah, we're trying to tell them to keep America safe, and they need to keep America safe.
Enough with the sanctuary cities. Border shutdown, illegal immigrant crackdown is proof Donald Trump is delivering. But now it's time, in my view, to accelerate the people coming into the country the right way. And green card holders doing things the right way, accelerate their admission. We need to inform people that there is a way to get into America.
Number one.
One of the things we're going to be redoing is your parks. I'm very good at grass because I have a lot of golf courses all over the place. I know more about grass than any human being, I think, anywhere in the world. And we're going to be regrassing all of your parks, all brand new sprinkler systems.
And that's what the president's not kidding. He says we're going to crack down on crime. We're going to make this place beautiful. We got our 250th birthday party. This is the nation's capital. Graffiti off the dividers. We'll have these parks with actually the grass in them. And Mr. President, by the way, start with the park across the street. It is a mess. Jonathan Turley joins us now. Fox News contributor J.B. Maurice C. Shapiro, professor of public interest of law at George Washington University Law School and author of The Indispensable Right. Jonathan, first off, your take on what we now know about the raid on John Bolton's house.
Well, we know less than we would want to. What we do know is that there was a raid this morning around 7 a.m. And we also know that there's a long history of disagreement between Bolton and the Trump administration, including the first Trump administration, over some of the content of his book. There was a pre-review process that all of these individuals have to go through. Obviously, there were disagreements during that process. And the suspicion is that this could possibly be tied to those lingering questions. Now, this search obviously is looking for material, likely documents. And so the assumption is that this is a search for classified material that Bolton is not allowed to have in his possession. Now, we'll find out more, I think, fairly soon. They're entitled to a copy of that warrant. They're also entitled to an inventory. That inventory is likely to contain anything in the house that has a digital memory or storage capacity.
So, Jonathan, the other thing is that's been informed to me that so he lost his security clearance a couple of days ago, right? Was it Tulsi Gabbard that took it away?
Right. So he was stripped of his security clearance. So he's not even entitled anymore to read or possess classified information, even in secure facilities.
So if he's at home with secured information that he can have as somebody with a security clearance, the minute he loses it, does he have to give up those documents? And are they trying to find something that would have been okay 2 days ago and now it's not okay?
It's extremely rare to have the right to possess classified documents in your home. I've had a top secret clearance off and on since the Reagan administration. And to get that type of clearance, you need a special authority. And you also have to have a special level of protection in your home. So usually classified material is contained in what's called a SCIF, which is a secure room that it can't be penetrated with electronic devices, or obviously it's secured in safes, et cetera. So I would be surprised if he had authority to have any classified information in his home, even when he had a clearance.
So let's talk about Washington, D.C. and what the president's doing now. The numbers are pretty staggering, the effect they've had already on crime in D.C. They're counting all police activity, but since the president mobilized the National Guard and the FBI, 630 arrests, 251 illegal aliens taken into custody, 3 known gang members, 1 missing child recovered, 86 firearms. Last night, no murders. So sadly, that is news. He also wants to beautify the place. You know Washington, D.C. well. Was this necessary?
Well, the thing is, many of us were surprised when Democratic politicians came out and said, we're not having a crisis in D.C. with crime. I don't know. I don't know of anyone that felt safe in Washington, D.C. I worry about my kids all the time, just going out to dinner. And there's long been allegations, including a person who was recently fired, that the D.C. police was essentially manipulating crime data to make it look like crime was on the decline. And what's clearly not on the decline are things like murder, which is extremely high in Washington, D.C. And some of this is sort of the relativism that comes out of the media that this isn't a crisis. This has been pretty much level with prior years, maybe a little higher on murder. The level of violence in D.C. would be considered a national crisis in any other country.
Right.
So we've sort of become desensitized to the fact that, these types of killings are common in our capital.
So the thing that prompted this whole move, and President Trump said he was going to do it anyway, but I think after this 19-year-old Doge staffer, nicknamed Big Balls, he was on our channel a couple of times. He got beat up trying to stick up for his girlfriend and stop a carjacking. He got beat up almost to inch of his life. They captured 2 of the people. One's a girl, one's a guy. There's other people involved. A 15-year-old boy and a girl from Maryland arrested after the attempted unarmed carjacking. They sent the girl to a youth shelter and put the boy back to his house because they said for him to get to school would have been a burden on the family to bring him back and forth from a detention center to school. That's the problem. These teenagers doing this stuff know there's no retribution. Is anything going to change?
I don't think anything is going to change in that sense. I mean, the fact is the only reason that these two weren't actually charged with murder is that this victim proved to be tougher than most. I mean, he had a beatdown that could very well have killed him. And anyone who would engage in that level of violence is obviously a threat to the community, regardless of your age. And so this is part and parcel of what we've seen in D.C. The assumption is that these people are going to get released, and they often do reoffend.
So I want you to hear what the question is. Is it going to go beyond 30 days and will it go to another city that's having trouble with crime? Don't go to Baltimore. Things are great. Listen to the mayor. Cut 4.
When you have the president of the United States singling out black cities and black mayors of black cities, you can see how this is being fueled across the country, and they're adding fuel to the fire of something that we all know already exists. These folks are more and more comfortable.
He goes on to say this, cut 5.
The reality is that as you and I are talking this morning, Baltimore has the fewest amount of homicides through this date that we have seen on record. We have historic reductions in gun violence, and that's still not enough for us. The president is so far off base and wrong about this. D.C. has a 30% reduction in violent crime, and we are seeing that in all of these cities, not just here in Baltimore.
Well, this is going to bring a scrutiny on those records, and let alone let's just take him at his word that he's telling the truth. That is Mayor Brandon Scott. How far is Baltimore from your house?
Oh, you get there within an hour. And what's really troubling about this narrative, which a lot of Democratic leaders are repeating, that this is really racism, is that many of our cities obviously have black mayors. Some of them have a black majority or near majority. But to suggest that that's a reason why you that the president shouldn't demand lower crime levels is really problematic. I mean, most of this crime is being committed in poor areas. And, you know, the fact is that most, you know, white residents statistically have a lower chance of being a victim of a crime in their areas. So if you take this logic to its natural conclusion, it means that, well, you should just stay away from cities that are majority black or areas that are majority black. To me, that has its own racist connotations, right? So to me, that's saying, you know, just leave those areas alone. Let you know, crime be rampant in those areas, and you focus on areas that are not black.
So Jonathan Turley, our guest, obviously. So that's one thing that's going to be interesting to see where the president goes next. J.D. Vance speculated, I won't play the soundbite because I'd rather hear from you, that Atlanta could be next with a Republican governor. Perhaps it might make sense. Will the president have trouble doing what he's doing in other cities that he's doing in D.C.?
Well, D.C. is obviously much easier because it's a federal enclave. There is no governor. The president can bring out the National Guard. Some of the pundits were suggesting it's somehow illegal. I never really did explain how they work that one out. When you go into an actual state, you do have the role of the governor. This became an issue in California. Obviously, if it's Georgia, you've got a governor who is likely to support these types of efforts. And so in places like Georgia, it may not be a problem. In places like California and other blue states, Illinois, the governors are likely to resist the effort.
But they're going to do it, and I guess see what happens. The president wants to restore law and order, and he wants to go into the troublesome areas. And a lot of the time, that is a Democratic mayor. I don't know many Republican mayors in major cities. I don't actually almost know none. The other area I want to bring you to is what's going on with sanctuary cities. Remember, in 2017, Jonathan, I was probably talking to you. As the president said, I want to make sanctuary cities unconstitutional, illegal, and it was challenged in court, and they were able to keep their sanctuary city status. What's different now as Pam Bondi goes after these sanctuary cities and states?
Well, the administration is taking a two-front approach to this. One is to say that if you are a sanctuary city and you are actively frustrating federal priorities and policies, we don't have to fund that, the federal government can pull back on money going to your city since you're fueling the problem. And then the second front is to say, if your conduct gets to the point of obstruction, that's a crime. And if you try to interfere with ICE and other agencies, we're going to proceed with a prosecution. We've already seen that, for example, with that judge that actively helped the guy flee from ICE. They're taking a very tough line on this. And so these cities and sanctuary states have got to be very careful. You know, the federal law does not the Constitution does not require them to be, quote, commandeered, right? So the Supreme Court will support them to the extent that they say it's not our job to enforce federal law, and we have a right to decline to do that. But you cross the line when you take active steps to make it more difficult for federal authorities to carry out these laws.
Yeah, I guess they're going to go with 32 letters to these problematic sanctuary cities. I think they're going to try to take them apart one by one and put immense pressure on it. And with the ICE numbers going up and the border sealing up, I think there's going to be this is not going away. So if you're a Democratic mayor, you got 3.5 years to ward off a guy that just wants to get illegal immigrants off your streets, beginning with the worst first. Jonathan, it's going to be interesting. We continue to also follow the Ambassador Bolton. They raided his house, did the FBI, and they raided his office. Jonathan Turley, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. See you.
All right, back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I want to say this one more time so everyone understands. Ian Sams, who was the White House spokesperson for a significant amount of Joe Biden's time as president, interacted with him two times. In there, under oath, he interacted with the president two times, the entire time. The entire time he worked in the White House. That's astonishing.
It's astonishing, and it's unacceptable. If Reagan or Nixon or Clinton was not meeting with his spokesperson, who, by the way, was his attack dog. This guy, Ian Sams, was an animal. Yet he said, two Zoom calls and two meetings with Biden over the course of 4 years. So when things heated up and all the controversy about what a terrible debate performance and Afghanistan collapse, this guy's tearing it up, ripping people, attacking you personally, going online, telling people you're wrong, threatening them to get the stories right. And he's flat out lying. He's not even meeting with the president. So he's blindly defending a guy that can't speak. Listen to Ian Sams in the past going after, by the way, Robert Hur, who talked to him more to the President Biden longer than Ian Sams, and he was getting paid. Ian Sams was. Cut 37.
The gratuitous remarks that the former attorney general talked about have naturally caught headlines and all of your attention. They're wrong, and they're inaccurate.
I think also on this issue of the memory, it's been selectively chopped up and edited and sent around because of the confusing way that report was written.
There is no case here. The president is innocent, and that was the conclusion of this case.
When I deal with him, he's sharp, he's asking tough questions, and he's speaking, I think maybe most importantly, speaking passionately about what matters to him.
Really shouting, if it's anything like his public statements, and he's talking about reflecting on two meetings. So they're easy to remember. That's the positive. And at least he was honest enough to say, I only met with him twice. You put this together. Now, who's left to meet? A lot of people. Kamala Harris could be next. Jeff Zients, the chief of staff. I mean, he's as culpable as anybody. Is he going to take the fifth? Here's James Comer on the significance of Ian Sams' revelations. Cut 36.
He communicated with Joe Biden two times. He saw Joe Biden, talked to Joe Biden two times, the entire stint as White House spokesperson. But yet he would every day tweet and issue statements from the podium of the White House, you know, combating everything that we were doing in the Oversight Committee with respect to the investigation, combating the Hur report, saying he didn't know. In fact, Robert Hur spent more time with Joe Biden than Ian Sams.
So, and Comer went on, he couldn't believe what he was hearing because he was getting some somewhat candid accounting of what happened behind the scenes. Now, what does this mean? It means it can never happen again. The Woodrow Wilson situation we talked about in history class. I remember learning about that in maybe seventh or eighth grade. You're going to be learning about Joe Biden and how they covered up for him. But most importantly, the thousands of commutations and clemency grants of violent criminals. Who was signing this stuff? Who decided no longer drilling for natural gas or fracking in Pennsylvania? He was shocked when Speaker Johnson told him, "You signed that order, Mr. President."
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills, but it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Our president has repeatedly said that he is ready to meet, including with Mr. Zelensky, with the understanding that all issues that require consideration at the highest level will be well worked out.
So that is a spokesperson for the foreign minister who said they were looking to do a trilateral, my interpretation, but the things that have to be worked out are almost all a bridge too far. Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery joins us now, Senior Director of the Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation for the Freedom of Defense of Democracies. Admiral, your thoughts about some of the new revelations and demands the Russians are rolling out. Have we not been listening to them, or did they changing what they've been saying about security guarantees? Because now they say we're not for international troops in Ukraine.
You know, honestly, Brian, first, thanks for having me. I will tell you, I think I don't like the Russians, but I think they've been consistent. I don't think they've ever, you know, I don't think they've ever acknowledged that they would accept European forces, particularly forces from countries that belong to NATO, to be part of a reassurance force. And
well,
of course,
I thought that came out of it. Security guarantees, they were open to troops. I thought they made that clear to Witkoff last week and then after Alaska, no?
I think what they made clear to Witkoff and what Witkoff heard are probably two different things. And I'm not blaming Witkoff for that. But to me, that's probably the original sin, is that the conversations between Witkoff and the Russians were misunderstood. But I also tell you, when the Russians talk about security guarantees, they include themselves guaranteeing the security of Ukraine, which I think we all understand is
farcical.
Yes, exactly.
So they say no NATO membership, no Western troops on soil, surrender of the entire Donbas region. That was delivered to them. That's what they're looking for. And once that's worked out, then they'll have a meeting. They want to freeze the front lines, keep everything where it stands in Kharkiv, Zaporizhia, which means they keep the nuclear plant, and relinquish some territory it has captured in Kharkiv, Sumy, and another long, unpronounceable city there. They also want areas they haven't captured. And they were never going to capture it. They said it was going to take another couple of years if they wanted to. That is full of rare earth and iron and other rich materials.
That's right. So I think what we can say is the Russians are for peace in principle, but not in practice. In other words, you know, when you try to drill down the details with them, their demands are such that Ukraine would be a puppet state of Russia, and certainly at Russia's will, you know, Russia could take what they want at their will. You know, if they give up their fortifications in Donetsk region, I mean, they're going to look like Poland in 1939, just a quick trot across towards Kiev for the Russian army. So I really think this is these are unacceptable conditions. And the president is going to have to influence President Putin to think properly. And the only way to do that is through a pressure campaign.
And pressure meaning, what would that pressure campaign look like, Admiral?
I've advocated for three things. One is that what you hear a lot about, which is sanctions that limit, you know, about 40% of Russian GDP is driven by fossil fuel sales. So if we can drive that down through the sanctions on Chinese and Indian companies that are taking shadow fleet fuel, will drive down their federal budget. Their federal budget is 40% on fighting the war, 60% paying babushka, you know, paying their base, which a lot of countries do. We pay our base too. But he'll have tough choices then. His base is critical to him, and fighting the war is critical to him. He'll have to pick one of them. Then the second and third things are defensive weapons, which you heard a lot about, Patriots and AMRAAMs, which the president is already starting to do. And then the third thing is offensive weapons. That's ATACMS. I would provide them. We have several thousand ATACMS left. We're moving on to a new weapon system called precision strike missiles. So let the Army push their ATACMS 1 and Block 1A to the Ukrainians and have the Europeans pay us back in money that the U.S. Army can buy precision strike missiles for. So everyone wins and Russia's pressurized.
Well, number one, Shadow Fleet. By definition, they're tough to find. Can we track them? Do we know where these ships are?
We know enough to hold we know where they're going. So you're right. When they're at sea, they're a little harder. I mean, we can find them at sea if we wanted to. But, you know, that's putting a lot of satellite effort against it. But in reality, they're going to only a handful of places to deliver their fuel in China, India, Turkey, a few other places. So I think we meet them at the delivery point. And then we hold those companies and countries accountable that receive it and pay for it.
So the change in policy, this is what General Keane told me this morning, what he said he would put on the table for Ukraine. Cut 17.
Well, I think he made a general statement. I don't know what the language was used with Steve Witkoff,
But I think he made a general statement to the president when he was with him, you know, dealing with security guarantees being reasonable, something we should discuss. But I think anybody knowing Putin, when you get into the details of this, that's something else again. So listen, it's a negotiating item for sure. But we should put it on the table what security guarantees Ukraine absolutely needs and what the United States should be providing as part of that multinational force Ukraine.
So he might be changing. I don't know if that's a negotiated area. I mean, I believe the Lavrov said we would like to be on the ground. So would the Chinese like to be part of the international forces, which is a joke. I mean, we're going ahead. I think our allies are going ahead and planning to give us an idea of what that international force would be like, the rotations. And they're also looking, last time I saw it 2 days ago, they're asking the U.S. to station fighter jets in Romania. That's where I thought we were at. But then Lavrov goes out and says what he says.
No, you're right. Jack Keane has it exactly right. We're going to have to eventually have a multinational force that doesn't include Russian forces. Now, look, that's the reassurance force. There'll be a monitoring force along the line of contact that could include the Chinese. I don't think it has to, but it would include some Europeans, Chinese, some other countries. But that's a small monitoring force looking for violations. The reassurance force, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 infantry and ground forces in Ukraine, that's going to need to be mostly British and French, since the Germans have already, you know, taken an opt-out, you know, a preemptive opt-out almost. And then the United States has to provide what General Keane was implying, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. We're the backbone of that. You know, for decisions made over 25 years, we have ISR capability. We can provide that. We can provide logistics. And then he's right. I think we provide the backup air power. In other words, I think the NATO air policing up front are European countries, but the U.S. is flying just in the background to say, do not mess with that NATO air policing force.
I just don't know if they say all these conditions got to be worked out. I guess their demand satisfied before they get to a trilateral. So, Admiral, project where we're going to be at in a week.
In a week, we will not have resolved this. I'm going to Ukraine in October to do some training with them, and I fully suspect the war will be going on then. I don't think there'll be a ceasefire or any kind of agreement by mid to late October. You know, this could easily – Putin's going to continue to push to see if he can get a military breakthrough. I think against all odds, he still considers that an option. And so from my perspective, this is going to keep going on. I think a week from now, the Russians will be spinning different things. But without a pressure campaign led by President Trump, because he's frustrated with President Putin – we're not going to get to real agreements. Right.
What about the frozen funds of $300 billion? Where would that be on your hit list? That is Russian funds. I'd love to see that go right to Ukraine.
Yep. Me too. You know, the problem here is in Russia, it's Belgium. The vast majority of these funds somehow are sitting in Belgium, which causes me to ask a lot about Belgium's banking system. But we'll set that aside and just say, yeah, that needs to happen. The rest of Europe needs to bring pressure down on the French and the Belgians, who are the two countries kind of pushing back against using that money for this purposes. All they've been using is the interest spun off by the money. They haven't been using the core $300 billion.
So the president, I'm just going to paraphrase what he put on Truth Social. I was trying to find it. But he said, look, it's impossible for Ukraine to be able to win a war when they can't hit the country that attacked them. It's like having a great defense but not being able to use your offense in football. So that's interesting, isn't it? So the president suddenly realizes, I don't think suddenly, but now he's saying it, that the problem is Kyiv can't hit Moscow, but Moscow can hit Kyiv. So knowing that and seeing this report that the Ukrainians have been working to develop its own long-range missile program. The status of the program has been shrouded in secrecy, and recently a new long-range cruise missile was being produced. That large-scale program was expected to be by the end of December of early next year. So Ukraine's, they are innovative, they are resourceful, they're relentless, and they're smart. So that would be interesting if suddenly Moscow felt some of the pain that Ukraine is, or would that worry you about escalation?
So I'm glad this is a Ukrainian indigenous product, the Flamingo missile that's going out. It's about a 1,000-pound warhead, I think, and it'll do some damage when they get through. Some will get shot down. So I'm glad they're developing that. And like I said, we provide ATACMS, which is more about the 400 kilometers around Kyiv going into close Russia. It's about hitting military forces where they aggregate, logistics, command and control. So use U.S. ATACMS to hit that near area, and then their own indigenous stuff to hit Moscow and other strategic targets. And what I would say to Moscow is, you literally strike them with 500 to 600 weapons a night. Did you not think they were going to hit you back with these flamingos? So it can't be escalatory. By that definition, the escalation management has all been on the Russian side.
Right. I mean, I played the Russian defense minister say that, you know, these NATO nations, they've had missiles hit Moldova multiple times, fall right by Romania's border, Poland's border. I mean, they are intentionally or unintentionally getting right touching on the edge of NATO. Are they daring NATO to act? Do they want this when they can't handle Ukraine?
I can't simultaneously say a lot of Russian shit sucks and then not acknowledge that maybe the reason it lands in Moldova, Poland, and Romania is because it sucks. In other words, these are missiles that did not detonate and instead flew their course to weapons expiration. I do not believe they were targeting those areas. Having said that, that lack of, Russia would never accept that from these countries. If they did a test firing in their country and it landed in Russia, they would become unglued, you know, so I get it. But we play this kind of provocation. The problem with being a democracy is that, you know, we're logical and we're responsive, and we don't escalate when someone makes an accident. Authoritarian states don't work that way. They take advantage of mistakes. They provoke and they escalate. So we just have to be careful with Putin. But look, these indigenous Ukrainian weapons, that's Ukraine's business. And Russia can stop it. They can stop their 500 cruise ballistic and drone missile attacks a night. And I imagine Ukraine would stop their handful of long-range Flamingo missiles.
So we have destroyers off the coast of Venezuela. I love that we're putting attention into Central and South America again. It looks like they've mobilized 4,500 troops. So Maduro, there's a $50 million bounty on his head. The Chinese have warned us to knock it off when it comes to Venezuela and recognize their sovereignty. So, Admiral Montgomery, how do you feel about this?
Well, first, I remember the Monroe Doctrine. I think China needs to pull its jets. But second, look, I like putting some maritime power down there. I wouldn't have put destroyers down there. Those were burning. You know, President Trump has acknowledged. In fact, he has been a leading advocate that our Navy's getting, you know, doesn't have enough airships and is getting burned out. I would have put a mix of what's called the littoral combat ship. Much less crew. It is a ship that doesn't have a mission against China or Russia. I'd have put that and they're stationed in Florida, in Jacksonville. I'd have put in Mayport. I'd have put them out against that. They don't look as cool, but they would serve the purpose, and they don't strike into Venezuela. But I don't really believe we're going to strike into Venezuela. I think we're going to cut off Venezuela's ability to push drugs Venezuelan cartels' ability to push drugs into our country. We've labeled their gangs, foreign terrorist organizations. I think we should push that harder. We should be using the Coast Guard and smaller Navy ships. Having said that, the president's the president. He gets to put whatever ships he wants down there. These ships are a strong deterrent. The problem is the 4,000 Marines, we're not going to look, I love Marines. The 4,000 Marines would do a lot of damage in Venezuela, but they would not overrun Venezuela. And so I would have held off on that a little bit. But, you know, he's trying to make a demonstration of our commitment to the security of the hemisphere. And so these three ships are not the worst thing.
But, Admiral, look what he did with the Panama Canal right away. And look at what happened in Bolivia. They just elect. They're about to have a runoff between two conservative governments. They've been socialist for the last 20 years. Venezuela is the problem in the region. It's helping foment so much of the unrest there. Welcomed in the Iranians, the Russians, the Chinese. That's why the Chinese are upset. They might lose an outpost.
And, you know, I'd be making sure Chevron's not doing any oil extraction in Venezuela right now. I would be cutting off all access to resources. And so this is how you do it. I agree. We should hold Venezuela accountable. When we're done with that, we might turn back and give Cuba a little bit of a slap because they're not that much better. But yeah, the Venezuelans are not a force for good. Maduro is a thug and an authoritarian who kills his jails and or kills his opponents, and including properly elected leaders that have had to flee the country and are in the United States right now. You know, we need to support democracy in Venezuela. So I'm for this. And more broadly, you're right. Support democracy in the region and make sure that crazy leftists are not elected in these countries, you know, with Chinese influence operation campaigns, undergirding them.
And don't you believe, Admiral, that shutting down the border the way we did is really hurting the cartel's revenue because they were selling a ton of drugs here?
Yeah, I love this president's approach to homeland security. It's three things. It's shutting down the border, it's improving our cybersecurity, and it's missile defense. When you put all three of those together, every president since 9/11 said, my number one priority is homeland security. No president since 9/11 has actually put the resources into protecting all three of those areas. I see this president already strong in two of them. I'm sure the cyber one's coming with the new national cyber director. But the border, missile defense, cyber, we've got to protect our homeland. That is the actual number one mission of U.S. national security elements.
Admiral Mark Montgomery, thanks so much. Fascinating time. A lot of moving parts. We'll see where this goes. I'll check in again, Admiral. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're going to come back and wrap up the hour. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Chairman, are you aware that during slavery, blacks fled? Are you aware that during the slavery times, blacks fled? They ran away.
I can't hear you very well.
Are you aware that when there was slavery times, blacks fled? During the Nazi times, Jewish people fled. They fled their oppressor.
So that is Nicole Collier, a Democrat from Texas, equating her going to Illinois for a long weekend with the governor catering to her every need to Jews during World War II. Of course, does an hour go by before people don't bring up Hitler or the World War II? And now blaming it on slavery. You're talking about, 1867. So this is how crazy it's gotten in Texas. But what they've done is they've had their quorum. They had their vote. They're going to be redistricting. They're going to get five more seats are going to be eligible. They get four of the five are going to be predominantly Hispanic seats. That's how confident and how much things have changed. Democrats have always thought, give me an Hispanic and I will show you a Democratic vote. Donald Trump didn't look at it like that. And now he's got most of the Hispanic votes. So four of those five districts. Now, California yesterday passed a special resolution in order to have a special election at the cost of $200 million. And that state is buried in red ink to have a special referendum to allow them to redistrict. And they only have about eight Republican seats there. So I guess they're going to look to get rid of all of them, even though 38% of the state are Republicans. That's fair? I'm not even sure it's going to pass to begin with. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, we're going to be joined by Mark Thiessen, who's just getting out of the shower. He wants me to buy him some time. And Scott Cochran's going to be here, West Alabama football head coach, author of Skull Session, Mastering the Mental Game in Sports, in Work, and in life. We thought that would be a great message today because I always love sports too, by the way. Quick note, even though I'm in New York right now, I'm going to be in Dallas tomorrow night. It's going to be streamed on Fox Nation, 8:30 Eastern time, 7:30 local time. And it's going to be history, liberty, and laughs. We're going to go through our history. We're going to talk about the Trump comeback. I'm going to be able to take your questions and also talk about the two sports books I have. I kind of try to build off that. We also going to have Alan West is going to join us on stage. You're not going to believe what I have him doing, as well as the great Will Cain, probably without a shirt. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president obviously is recognizing this as going forward, knowing we could be in a much better place if Biden hadn't held back, one, the weapons themselves initially, and then two, how to use those weapons.
And General Keane, as usual, is 100% right. Setback with Russia means Trump is ready to step up. with Ukraine. My fingers are crossed. We bring you the latest.
Number two.
They better look out. I sent 32 letters to mayors, multiple letters to these governors. They say that we're trying to tell them how to do their jobs. Yeah, we're trying to tell them to keep America safe, and they need to keep America safe.
Yeah, if people don't know, do their jobs, they need to be told. That's what Pam Bondi's saying. Border shutdown, illegal immigrant crackdown. It's proof Donald Trump is delivering. But now it's time to, in my view, to accelerate for people coming here the right way. Green card holders doing it the right way. Maybe USB visas doing it the right way. How do you feel about that? Maybe Dems might play ball?
Number one.
One of the things we're going to be redoing is your parks. I'm very good at grass because I have a lot of golf courses all over the place. I know more about grass than any human being, I think, anywhere in the world. And we're going to be regressing all of your parks.
The President of the United States says, I'm going to make the place nice and I'm going to make it safe. I'm talking about D.C. The crackdown and beautification push is off to a smashing success. Why we should all hope this show is coming to a city near you. Let's bring in Mark Thiessen. He has another great column out called The Trump-Led Show of Support for Ukraine Puts Putin in a Bind. And he seems, through his foreign secretary, been changing the rules and some of the things he said since Alaska. Or did we misinterpret what he said leading up to Alaska and through? Mark Thiessen, you do not speak Russian, but you understand the Russians. Why are they changing demands?
Well, can you give me a minute? I'm still toweling off.
Okay. Should I buy some more time?
No. Look, Vladimir Putin was feeling on top of the world leaving Alaska. He thought he's back on the international stage, meeting with Donald Trump, you know, all the rest of it. And then Trump turns around a couple of days later and has this extraordinary meeting of all these European leaders with Zelensky, where they come together to offer the Ukraine security guarantees. It's absolutely clear Donald Trump supports not just in word but in deed the sovereignty and independence of Ukraine, and they come up with a great security package. And then he says to Putin, meet with Zelensky, and Putin's like, no. And so now Trump is like, okay, now we know who the obstacle to peace is. So I think you're going to see some hammers coming down pretty quick on Vladimir Putin if he doesn't get back involved in the process and start making some concessions.
So Peggy Noonan writes, the meeting this week of major leaders of Europe and the President Zelensky and Trump was a historic 10 strike, more than is probably appreciated. Putin didn't want to see that meeting, that unity. It was brilliant to have them come to the White House. It underscored America's enduring convening power and was an admission of their calculation as to Trump's stature. France, Germany, Britain, Italy, Finland, and EU, and Zelensky pulled together. They want Ukraine saved and the war over. They don't know if Trump can handle Putin, but they badly want him to. So the mission and the images of that happening possibly set back Russia Zelensky trilateral. Do you agree?
Well, I think it's set back in the sense that it's exposing. Look, Putin has been tapping Trump along. He's enjoying the interaction. He's enjoying talking to him, but he doesn't want to make the concessions necessary for peace because he's not interested in peace. And Trump is trying to squeeze it. He understands that he's resistant. He understands that he wants all of Ukraine. He understands that he's not going to let him have all of Ukraine. And so Trump is trying to push him into making concessions and having an agreement, and he's resisting. And at some point, very soon, it's going to be either the rubber's going to meet the road, and he's either going to make the concessions or he's not. And he's got a very clear choice. He can continue the war, and he's going to have increased military assistance to Ukraine, not paid for by U.S. taxpayers, American weapons paid for by the Europeans. And Trump looks like he's going to do what he did against ISIS and let Zelensky take the gloves off and start hitting Russia. They just struck a U.S. factory in Ukraine that had nothing to do with war, and that there's going to be a price for that to be paid by Vladimir Putin. Trump doesn't allow you to do that kind of stuff to America. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see more attacks. Or he can come to the peace table and end the war and accept that Ukraine is going to be a sovereign nation and that he's never going to be able to invade again. Those are his choices, and he doesn't seem he's trying to get out of them. But those are the choices he has.
Here's what Lavrov said yesterday. Cut 16.
Our president has repeatedly said that he is ready to meet, including with Mr. Zelensky, with the understanding that all issues that require consideration at the highest level will be well worked out.
So he wants, this is what he called well worked out. He wants no Western troops on Ukraine soil. Surrender of the entire Donbas region, which includes areas they have not won yet. The report also claimed that Putin would agree to freeze the front lines where it currently stands in Kharkiv and Zaporizhia and relinquish some territory it had captured in Kharkiv and Sumy. Putin is demanding Ukraine give up all eastern Donbas, renounce ambitions to join NATO, remain neutral, and keep Western troops out of the country. So this is not close to what we thought. We thought they agreed to some type of international troop presence in exchange for keeping the money, the land they stole.
Yeah, so that's not going to work. And that's what the negotiations are about. But Putin doesn't get a say in what the security guarantees we offer Ukraine are. That's between the United States and Ukraine. And, you know, the reality is if he's insisting on no international troops, demilitarization of Ukraine, more territory and all the rest, he's not going to get that. And it just proves that he's not willing to end the war. Trump said very clearly on Monday, he said, I don't want an agreement that's just going to last a couple of years. I want an agreement and then this whole thing starts up again. He wants an agreement and a settlement that ends this permanently. And so what that requires Ukraine is making lots of concessions. They're not going to pursue getting back Crimea. They're not going to pursue getting back this territory militarily, though they're not going to acknowledge that it's part of Russia. They're accepting the land. In exchange, they got to have protections to make sure that Putin doesn't just wait until Trump is gone and then reinvade. Putin invades whenever Trump is not president. That's the record, right? So when Trump's going to leave office in 3.5 years, and there's got to be some guarantees in there that make sure that Putin doesn't take advantage of that and start the whole war over again.
So how about that? And I'll just paraphrase the Truth Social post when he said, Ukraine, it can't win. It's hard for Ukraine. It's impossible for Ukraine to win if they can't hit Moscow. If you have a great team with a great defense, but you don't have an offense, you can't win. And the president's saying what we've been saying all along. Joe Biden did enough for Ukraine not to lose, but made sure they didn't win. Here's what General Keane said about that. Cut 20.
It wasn't until November of last year, during the election month, that Biden released that restriction because he knew the outcome. President Trump was coming into power. That's how restricted Ukraine has been, and they've always had one arm tied behind their back. The president obviously is recognizing this as going forward, knowing we could be in a much better place if Biden hadn't held back, one, the weapons themselves initially, and then two, how to use those weapons.
And our whole Pentagon thought that Ukraine was going to last 4 days. And they were going to remember, famously, they said to Zelensky, you want to ride out to safety so you don't have to steal a chopper like the guy in Afghanistan did. And he's like, what do you mean? I don't need a ride. I need weapons. And the fight's still going on 41 months later. That's how wrong our intelligence was and the Biden administration was.
So here's the thing. This war would have never started if Donald Trump was president. And under Joe Biden, it could have been over in months. If he had given Ukraine all the weapons he ended up giving them over 3 years, and if he had taken the restrictions off of their use of them and just done it when the Russians were – keep in mind, Russia controls about 19% of Ukraine right now. They controlled almost 30 in 2022. The Ukrainians drove them completely out of northern Ukraine. They pushed them back and took back all that territory. Where they had no restrictions on the Black Sea, they sunk half of the Black Sea fleet.
Without a navy.
Without a navy, using just sea drones. And to this day, the Russian Navy dares not go into Ukrainian territorial waters because they'll get their ships will be sunk. If we had done the same thing to them while they were retreating and just taken the gloves off, given them all these weapons, the war would have been won. by now, and Trump wouldn't have had to inherit this mess. So Biden is responsible for the war beginning and the fact that it's still going on. He never wanted to win because he thought a victory for Ukraine would be destabilizing, because he was terrified of escalation. Donald Trump is not afraid of escalation. He knows nobody's going to chase him up the escalation ladder. So what he's saying with that tweet is, maybe what we do is we let Ukraine just, you know, bomb the hell out of Russia. Why not? And by the way, Donald Trump and Zelensky are the only two leaders in the world that have attacked Russia on its territory. Donald Trump launched a cyber attack on St. Petersburg, and everyone talks about, you know, election interference and all the other stuff we've been having about the, you know, the troll farm and the election interference in 2016. In 2018, Donald Trump launched a cyber attack and took out the troll farm. So, you know, that's an act of war. So Donald Trump isn't afraid to hit Russia. He killed hundreds of Wagner fighters in Syria. He's not afraid of going toe-to-toe with Putin if Putin doesn't want peace.
So Senator Richard Blumenthal—
I would be worried if I was Putin.
Senator Richard Blumenthal went on CNN to make sure everybody knew that Trump's being played. Cut 23.
Do you think Trump made any inroads with Putin at that summit?
The reality is no, because just look at what he does, not what he says. He is indeed continuing to play for time. He's prolonging the fighting. He's closing in on Prokhorovsk in Donetsk in Russia, but he's also continuing to keep those kidnapped 20,000 children. And I think it's time to hold him accountable as a terrorist state for those children.
Do you think, and of course, he's using an opportunity to take a shot at the president as usual, but do you think the president puts out there, if they continue to put off the trilateral and have these crazy demands, do you think the president puts out there that sanctions are 5 days away, the Senate sanctions are 5 days away, 4 days away, 3 days away?
So look, Donald Trump was right to have that meeting and to look Putin in the eye and try and give him a chance. And he wants to end this war. He doesn't want to escalate the war. But if Putin gives him no choice, he'll escalate the war. So he's not being played. He's playing this out. He is giving Putin every chance to bring this to a final conclusion. And if Putin chooses war over peace, Trump's not going to be afraid of that. And it's very clear from the last week, you have the Washington summit and you have the Alaska summit. Who's the obstacle to peace right now? It's Russia.
And that's your point. You're making Putin step up or step back. And when he steps back, he'll reveal himself.
Put up or shut up. It's time to start making concessions and end this war. And if Putin's not willing to do that, then he's going to pay a price for it.
Do you agree that if Kyiv falls, this will be as bad for Trump as Afghanistan falling for, as Karl Rove said, as Afghanistan falling for Biden?
It would be, but Trump's not going to let that happen. Trump was a guy who armed the Ukrainians when the Obama Biden administration wouldn't. There's never been a scenario in which Donald Trump is going to allow Russia to take over all of Ukraine. That's just never been on the table, except in the delusional mind of the Trump derangement people. Trump was the toughest president on Russia since Ronald Reagan in his first term. And he's never going to allow Vladimir Putin to take over Ukraine. He just spent months negotiating a minerals deal to go into business with Ukraine. Right. Why on earth would he let Putin have it?
And how about the drone deal we just cut? They get Patriots and we get drones. Mark Thiessen, a fascinating time. It's going to be a big weekend. And like I said, we know exactly what the deal was, and we're seeing what Russia is now demanding. We could see them moving the goalpost. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
All right, when we come back, your chance to, lines are jammed. 1-866-408-7669. I'll be able to get some calls in. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'd walk into a room with him with a foreign country, and the foreign country would give me everything because they said, oh, no, they're going to get blown up because John Bolton's there. He's not a smart guy, but he could be a very unpatriotic guy. I mean, we're going to find out. I know nothing about it. I just saw it this morning. They did a raid.
Do you expect the DOJ to brief you on this?
Yeah, they'll brief me probably today sometime.
And the foreign minister.
I don't want to. I tell Pam and I tell the group. I don't want to know about it. Just you have to do what you have to do. I don't want to know about it. It's not necessary. I could know about it. I could be the one starting it. I'm actually the chief law enforcement officer. But I feel that it's better this way.
There you go. The President of the United States meeting before walking into a museum. He's definitely cracking down on what he thinks is anti-Americanism as we come up on year 250. And he's talking about the raid on John Bolton's house and his office. Sandra in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Brian. Happy Friday. I'm so happy about, first of all, Letitia James. Like, that was like music to my ears to hear that. What goes around comes around. She neglected her duty to uphold the Constitution, excessive penalty, violating the Eighth Amendment. She should be disbarred for this, maybe go to jail for mortgage fraud. So, like I said, what goes around comes around. And then I see today about John Bolton, another traitor. I mean, little by little, everyone's going to get their turn.
Richard in Long Island. Hey, Richard.
Good morning, Brian. Listen, thank you for being at your microphone at a time when a lot of other radio hosts are, delegating their shows to secondaries. Listen, we've had troops in Germany for 80 years, and it no longer makes sense for them to be so far west. They should be repositioned to Poland, to Romania, and even little Moldova, which is right on the Black Sea by Odessa. I think this is Trump's chance to make that move, maybe even as part of a guarantee package for Ukraine.
Well, I think looking at Ukraine, I think Romania is the staging point. We have built massive bases in Germany, so it kind of benefits us to be there. And now you're thinking like me, Richard. I see the threat. It's Russia. And the stronger we are and the more formidable we are and determined we are, that's the best chance for peace. Backing up and saying don't be provocative doesn't work for the Russian mindset. So we agree on that. You listen to Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The punter is on the field for LSU. Hangs it. Had an opportunity for Perkins back there at about the 21-yard line. LSU wins the BCS National Championship. Nick Saban coming across the field. Shake hands with Bob Stoops.
Just like that, we had a champion and a great moment for Scott Cochran. He was the strength coach for that team. And Scott Cochran is now the West Alabama head football coach. And his journey there is truly noteworthy. And he's trying to spread what he's learned then and how he's been such an inspiration to so many. And his book is called Skull Session, Mastering the Mental Game in Sports, Work, and Life. Coach, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Man, thank you so much for having me on, baby. Fired up to be here.
Well, for a change, you're not really fired up that much in your life. I watched the special on you on ESPN. Truly amazing. First off, the pressure you put on yourself, how much did that have to do with the problem you had a little bit later with drinking?
Yeah, I think it's all encompassing, right? I think, it started off with migraines because I yell a lot, you know, and so the doctors, you know, gave me oxycodone and they said, hey, this is addictive. And at the time, you know, I'm a strength coach. I'm, you know, very successful. Everything's going great. And you're going to tell me I'm going to get addicted to a pill, right? So it's all encompassing. I think the stress, the yelling, all of it came in.
So the role of Nick Saban in your life?
Yes. I worked for him for 18 years. 18 years with Coach Saban, and man, what an honor and a privilege.
What did he see in you?
I think he saw somebody that cared about the players. I think he saw someone that could do exactly what he needed from a strength and conditioning and a mental development position.
And you produced for him. And for a team to be that successful, for a program to be that successful, everyone's got to work. But Scott, a lot of times strength coaches aren't football coaches. You're just strength. You could be a bodybuilder, whatever it is. You know strength, and you know what that sport needs. You're a football guy fundamentally, though, right? Who taught you the game?
JT Curtis, my high school coach. He's out of New Orleans, and he's probably one of the winningest. If he's not the winningest, he will be this season, high school coach in the country. But that's who I learned from. And obviously working for Coach Saban, that's really who I learned how to tweak and how to pay attention to the details.
So considering all the success you've had at different programs, LSU, Alabama, Georgia, West Alabama is not the biggest program, but it's probably the most perfect program for you. Why?
It's perfect because they understand that I'm a man in recovery, number one. And number two, the location. My babies were born in Tuscaloosa, and I'm an hour from Tuscaloosa. So for me, it's great because I get to be around players, and that's where I thrive.
You know, it's interesting, Scott, too, on another level. It's going to be pretty rare if these guys go pro. So you really have to have the student athlete. And that plays to your strength, right? You're not going to have the prima donnas, no offense, that think they're bigger than the program. And if you yell at them, they're going to just transfer and you're going to go to the portal. You don't have that, do you?
No, I don't. This spring, I had zero guys transfer. And I was trying to create spots. And I was grateful for it, you know, because they bought in. They bought into the program. That's one thing that is really cool around here is that the players love football. And that's so much fun to coach.
But do you think the strength of Scott Cochran now is you have balance? Because I also heard balance is overrated to some people, that you have to have focus. But do you have more of a balance than the strength coach at Alabama and LSU? Do you have more of a balance now as head coach?
Yes, very much so. You know, through my job, through my addiction, my family, you know, took the brunt of it. They were what I call my hostages, you know. And now,
what would you do? You'd come home and be sullen?
I'd come home and be exhausted. Oh. Or I'd have to get on the phone and talk to a player's mom or dad because the job just never ended. And I embraced it. I loved it. But I had no idea that my family, even though I was there, I really wasn't present for them.
So you wrote this book. It's about you, but you want to help other people. And not just people that took OxyContin and couldn't stop. What do you want to relay to somebody that never put on the eye black or the helmet that could benefit from talking to you and reading this book?
Yeah, I think everyone is trying to have success in their field, right? They're just trying to take one step to be great. And through my recovery, through all the character development we have done at LSU, Alabama, and Georgia, we had this program, and it was called Skull Sessions. So if you're trying to take your organization to another level, to kind of give it that edge, it's a step-by-step process. And along the way, you get to hear cool stories, and you get to hear about my downfall and how I'm able to brush it off and come right back.
And when people relate to you, you go, well, I had that story, but it was Wall Street. I had that story, but it was my own business, and my business failed, and, you know, I was destroyed. That was my self-esteem. So do they all fit to your skull session?
Yes, for sure. You can easily find a way, whether it's individually. I'm just better with organizations and teams. So if you're, you know, a CEO and you're trying to get your company to take that next step, here's a simple plan that we used. And it's simple things like how to write your goals. Everybody has a plan and what they do to write their goals, but normally they write their goals down and they never see their goals again, right? So now we have a plan. We're going to put these goals on paper, on a mirror, on a post-it,
right,
on your mirror. And you get to look at that every morning, every night. And I might be coming that.
And what people say too, if you want to reach that goal, ask your question, why? You want to be rich? Why? Are you trying to prove something to somebody? Well, that's not going to work, because when you get there, you're not going to feel satisfied. So why do you want to be my middle linebacker? I watched the Jerry Jones documentary. And yeah, he was captain of his football team, but he said that, you know, he was not the best player, knew he wasn't going to be pro. You know what his senior thesis was? How to own a football team, and then how to market a football team. And even though he was drilling oil in the back of his head, he wanted to own a football team. That's the type of things that you get from Skull Sessions, right?
Yes, sir. Exactly right. You know, and it's that little step. And the cool part is, it's the same way in recovery. You know, when you're down and out and you're trying to figure out, how do I get out of this hole, this pit that I've dug for myself? Because at the end of the day, you have no one to blame. So it's a very similar parallel. How do I write my goals? How do I talk to myself, right? What am I saying to myself?
So, Scott, here's the other thing. If winning is everything, you're telling a story that you hit bottom. So you're showing vulnerability. For a long time, I imagine Scott Cochran thought vulnerability was weakness. I better not show players any of that. How tough That's was right. that move?
That was, you know, it was very freeing, you know, to be able to surrender and say, you know what, I can't do this by myself, was really cool to see how many people jumped in the boat instead of kicking the boat to the side. They jumped in and they were like, okay, how can I help you? How can I help you? And it's amazing when you ask friends, when you ask family for help, how they respond, you know, because it's the last thing you would ever think to do. I got this. I can handle it. I'm the guy that helps everybody. And then you ask for help yourself. And then all of a sudden an army shows up, you know?
And that's great. And you could tell the other kids, you never know what people are going through. Did you find that most of the people were shocked? You mentioned Nick Saban was shocked, right? Yes. Were most people shocked outside your family?
Yeah. My wife was completely shocked. Had no idea. She knew I struggled really bad with migraines, but she also trusted the doctor that I went to. Little did she know that I stopped going to that doctor and found one that would write me different scripts. But she knew I had pain, but she had no idea that I had taken it to the level that I took it until I overdosed. And she found me overdosed.
And lastly, Scott Cochran, how's the team going to be this year?
Man, I hope we're going to be good. Right. That's the coolest thing about football is you always find out.
Right.
You find out if it works or if it doesn't.
Yes, and you hope it does. And I feel like you're going into it with that feeling of optimism. Scott Cochran, thanks so much. Congratulations on Skull Session and your life. Strength. Yes. You're the strength and conditioning coach, but now head coach over two decades. And the book is called Mastering the Mental Game in Sports, Work, and Life. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on.
You got it. Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We got here because the President of the United States is struggling. We got here because the President of the United States is one of the most unpopular presidents in U.S. history. We got here because he recognizes that he will lose the election. Congress will go back into the hands of the Democratic Party next November. Can't win by playing by traditional sets of rules. He plays by no rules. I remind you all the time, it's not the rule of law, it's the rule of Don.
That's true. Rule of Don. I'll agree with that last sentence. He's got 47% approval rating. He's up 5 points in a week. He's got the border shut down. He's running down illegal immigrant criminals. He's got, I don't know, law and order in D.C. He pretty much got the Big Beautiful Bill, which is his entire domestic agenda, passed right away. That includes a lot more defense spending, ICE spending. He's engaging with the problems that was left behind by the previous administration. He just took out Iran's nuclear program. The question is for how long, and I think he'll be equipped to handle it. Will the next guy or woman? So, Gavin Newsom, the premise of why the president's gerrymandering is wrong, what he's trying to do is buck tradition. Outside George W. Bush after the 9/11 attacks when he held the House and Senate and increased his advantage because you're in a war. It's going to be tough for President Trump to be the party in power, to stay in power through the midterm. So he said, look, this 2020 census was an abomination. Blame it on the pandemic. Blame it on the president. I don't know. I also don't think illegal immigrants should count. Why? Because clearly it's been exposed that Joe Biden's plan was to flood illegal immigrants into battleground states. Why would that be? Because they'll be counted in the census. And in the census, you get seats by that census. So in other words, if you can get him into left wing states like and cities like New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, you have a better chance of getting more congressmen and women in there. And then you have massive gerrymandering. There are no Republican seats, but 36% of the vote in Massachusetts. You've seen all the maps, the ridiculous maps in Illinois. It's comically stupid and gerrymandered. So they've maxed out. Now, the president said in Texas, why is it I get 60% of the vote and there's so many Democratic seats? Let's re-gerrymander. And he did. He did it. And they're allowed. Constitutionally, California is not. They have to pass a referendum. And they did. And now there's going to be a special vote of a cost of $200 million. $200 million in a state buried in debt that insists on giving education and free health care to legal immigrants. That's that state. It's between $200 and $250 million. The governor could not find the money for Proposition 56, would have made crime illegal again in California. They all had to crack down and passed by nearly 70% of the vote. But he said, I really can't find the financing for law enforcement and increase the jail size in order to arrest and detain criminals. The governor says this is a temporary measure, but from almost everybody's experience, it'll stay. So there's a bunch of really good Kevin Kiley, Daryl Issa, Republicans, formerly Kevin McCarthy, out in California, and they're going to push back. Now, Indiana is being pushed by Mike Braun's being pushed. He's good friends with the president. Your governor, go ahead and gerrymander. So that's the way it is. But what Gavin Newsom's trying to do is saying he's a hero here. They've raised a lot of money. They raised $6.2 million. Obama raised $1 million. And this is what he's doing. Matt Bennett worked for Bill Clinton as his own private consulting firm, Cut 31.
Democrats are loving watching Gavin Newsom taunting Donald Trump. Somebody is fighting back at long last. And he actually has agency to actually do something, the ability to try to fight back against the Texas redistricting scheme. This wouldn't be happening if Trump hadn't started it first, hadn't done the thing in Texas and trying to do it in Indiana and elsewhere. So I think Democrats are united in their belief that while we didn't want this fight, Newsom is right to be fighting it.
To further gerrymander your state that's already been gerrymandered. And then you try to trump an independent organization that the people of California already voted for, where in Texas, they're allowed to go in. They pass a quorum, they have a vote, they redistrict. Tony in Wisconsin, I'm pretty sure they're going to end up on the losing side of things. Tony in Wisconsin. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how are you doing, Bob?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm really worried about the way these things are going. We do need to clean things up, and we need to do some investigating.
On what?
But we need to stop at a certain point because we don't need to tear down the institutions that we're trying to protect.
What institution concerns you?
Well, in the judicial system, we're going after the prosecutors, and I'm afraid that people are starting to lose faith in the judicial system. If they can't trust the judges, then how are they going to trust the people in power, you know? They're starting to lose faith in the system altogether. We have to be very careful. We had to tread lightly, lest we tear down the system that we have faith in.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely go through the system. No one's saying ignore the courts. In fact, the president's got to deal with a lot of terrible decisions. You've seen it. You saw one turned over. Thanks so much for the call, Tony. We all want to make sure institutions, not just your political party or your candidate, is successful. But yesterday, the president got a major victory, and we all knew it. When Letitia James sued Donald Trump civilly, saying that they didn't tell the truth to get loans that banks gave and Trump paid back, they just decided that the agenda was to destroy Donald Trump, and the attorney general made no bones about it. She flat out said it. Her goal was to stop Trump. Well, yesterday they said, well, Trump might have done some things wrong here, but he should not have been fined $500 million. In fact, one judge said this is pure lawfare in different words. So this, to me, is a huge, huge setback and another body blow to these Democratic politically run judgeships, attorney generals, who think they can just bully a guy like Donald Trump because he's in the Republican Party. And we saw Biden go after him with lawfare. We saw Letitia James. We saw Fannie Willis go up in flames. Here's George Grasso, a retired New York City judge on MSNBC, Cut 34.
When this mess, thinking as a lawyer and as a judge, I would describe this decision as like a bit of a legal train wreck for the Court of Appeals to try and figure out. And it's, in my mind, a real big open question if even the underlying part of the case in terms of the finding of fraud against Trump and his family, that even that will survive the Court of Appeals.
It's only going to get better for him. Right now, they said to the Trump family, you can't run your company for 2 years and for Donald Trump for 3 years. I think they're pretty much running. They also gave him a monitor. Evidently, they were friends with the monitor. The Trumps don't like to talk about it. Who would? But they always said just held to the, didn't complain, kept fighting, and now they are winning after winning after winning. Yeah, and they were deep banked, too. Don't forget, I want to see you tomorrow night. I want to see you tomorrow night in Dallas, Texas. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Streamed on Fox Nation. But if you're in the area, you're required to come. You will have a great time. We're going to look back at great moments in American history. And most of all, you'll have a memorable night. BrianKilmeade.com.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Tommy Lahren at the bottom of the hour. Shannon Bremen studio now. We woke up today around 7 o'clock. Okay, I was up at 2:30. But 7 o'clock, we find out there's a raid on John Bolton's home, former national security advisor to Trump, former ambassador to the UN under Bush. And they obviously have had a falling out. John Bolton's been unbelievably aggressive against Trump, but somehow the FBI was raiding his house for documents and his office. And we'll get to that shortly, and we'll follow that story with Shannon Bream. But let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The president obviously is recognizing this as going forward, knowing we could be in a much better place if Biden hadn't held back, one, the weapons themselves, initially, and then two, how to use those weapons.
And by the way, Jack Keane said that in real time 3 years ago. We are going to talk about a setback with Russia. It means Trump is ready to step up, I hope, for Ukraine. We bring you the latest.
Number two.
They better look out. I sent 32 letters to mayors, multiple letters to these governors. They say that we're trying to tell them how to do their jobs. Yeah, we're trying to tell them to keep America safe, and they need to keep America safe.
And that's why the president calls her the best attorney general ever. The border shutdown, illegal immigrant crackdown, has proved Donald Trump is delivering. But now it's time, in my view, to accelerate for the process for people doing it the right way. Green card holders, people on waiting in line the proper way. And even Democrats might buy in on that, let alone helping out hospitality, meat packers, and farmers.
Number one.
One of the things we're going to be redoing is your parks. I'm very good at grass because I have a lot of golf courses all over the place. I know more about grass than any human being, I think, anywhere in the world.
Good.
We're going to be regrassing all of your parks.
Yes, especially the one across the street from the White House. It's an embarrassment. Andrew Jackson sits there alone around dirt. D.C. crackdown beautification push is off to a smashing success. Why we should all hope this show comes to a city near you. But Shannon, I just saw a poll. Shannon, great to see you from Fox News Sunday. I just saw a poll that says 91% of Washington, D.C. residents don't want the stepped-up presence of FBI officers and National Guard. What about you?
I would like to see the question. You know how the polling questions, it very much the wording of the question matters, because I live and work in D.C. for the past 20 years.
And?
I do not hate seeing calm streets and a Union Station where I'm not being accosted as I'm trying to get to and from the train. I mean, for me, that's a positive. I know people don't like the looks, of course, of soldiers on the streets of American cities. You got to worry about the optics of that. I got to tell you, they're using them in a lot of tourist areas at the Metro or our subway, you know, version of subway there in D.C. at their stations. And so there's, of course, going to be backlash, and I think that's just because it's a Republican president who is doing this. D.C. is very independent. It's a federal district, though, and there are portions of oversight that the White House and Congress get to do because it's not a city, it's a federal district. But I see it as a net positive so far. I like feeling safer, and even the police chief there said us having more law enforcement on the streets is a positive.
See, I watched J.D. Vance yesterday, and he seems to think that the next stop could be Atlanta. And think about it. You have a friendly governor and Governor Kemp. You have an unfriendly mayor. But it's not a California situation where the mayor and governor are unfriendly. So that could be a crackdown. You can't tell me Atlanta couldn't use the bulking up. It's just a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. It is. And also National Guard, you need them available to respond to natural disasters and, you know, serious situations of unrest and other things. So it's not sustainable forever and ever, but you've got multiple states who have sent their soldiers, their National Guardsmen and women to D.C. And yeah, if you start spreading them around the country, maybe it's a targeted source for like 3 to 6 months in a particular city and you move on. It seems clear to me the administration is testing this out in D.C. for possible franchises across the country.
You know, my opinion, my plan. I would use this time, I get a stack table, card table.
Okay.
And I would have make this a cop recruiting thing.
Oh.
So we'd be able to turn this over. What are you, 800 cops short of what you need?
Yeah.
So let's recruit. Let's fill up an academy class. So when the National Guard leaves, there'll be new fresh troops coming in, officers coming
You're always thinking ahead.
I think so. I think I
Are you thinking ahead that this could be like a side hustle for you, being a cop?
Hmm.
If you like could Dean set Cain? Your hours, like you have, right, you and Dean Cain out there, we would get you little capes,
right.
Little outfits, no, little crime fighters.
Superhero background. I would need training.
Yeah, but he's hitting the ground, ready to go. Just as long as there's no kryptonite, he's good.
So among the skeptics that think it's a bad move, Matt Bennett, former advisor to Bill Clinton, now he's got his own consulting firm, which I hear could be lucrative. Cut seven.
On the other hand, this is probably not the best way of going about making Washington safer. As Mayor Bowser has made clear, she's 500 cops short. And one of the reasons for that is that there's about $1 billion missing from the D.C. budget that congressional Republicans just took away and for no reason at all and haven't given her.
Well, I'm sure there's a counter to that, but you've heard that they said it on your show last week, $1 billion got cut.
Yeah, and they're trying to work on that. It was something that I don't think was fully intentional, that there wasn't going to be some way to refund that part of D.C. Everybody's out of D.C. right now. You may have heard the August recess is underway.
Right.
But there has been talk across the aisle that they wanted to make a fix to that budget issue.
So if they get the $1 billion, that'll certainly help. But the thing is, you need candidates. And if a 15-year-old carjacks you, you want to be able to prosecute him? You know the guys that beat up the big balls from Doge?
Already back out.
Yeah.
On the streets of D.C.
One is in their parents' custody,
mm-hmm.
and the other one's in a shelter, but she's still going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And she has multiple offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem.
Yeah.
But how do you change that?
Well, I think that you got to change some of the laws there in D.C. And, of course, this is a discussion that now U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro is having down there saying, I can't go after kids. And there are some of these laws in D.C. that put people into that category if they're under 24. Listen, I know a lot of people who have been married, been in the military, gone to college, have kids, whatever, by 23, and we're going to treat them as juveniles in some sense for some of these crimes potentially in D.C. I mean, it seems a little bit ludicrous.
Right. A 23-year-old is not a minor.
They
could be fighting 5 years already in
exactly.
the Army.
Exactly.
All right. So let's talk about what that horrific story of the tractor-trailer driver, the illegal immigrant who can't read English, makes a real ridiculous three-point turn, I guess, and killed three people. He's been extradited over to Port St. Lucie in Florida from California. Who gave him the license? California. Who's that company? Their license has been suspended. They've stopped all immigrants from driving and getting new licenses until further notice, said Pam Bondi. Here is Governor Ron DeSantis. Cut 11.
You know, we had a challenge to our processing and deep.
There were three people killed by a guy who should have never been in our country, should have never gotten work authorization, and certainly should not have been issued two commercial driver's license.
So you got to be tough against illegals, but if other states aren't, it bleeds into your state.
Yeah, and if you think about CDL licenses, like you said, state of California, state of Washington, so that's two places that he passed muster enough somehow to get these licenses. You're driving a machine that is potentially, you know, tons of material out on a street that could be very deadly in any situation. And if somebody can't even recognize the traffic signs, I don't know how they got through the process. I remember failing my first driver's license test at 15 years old, being devastated. But nobody was like, okay, here's your license. Just go right ahead. I don't know how an adult who's driving this kind of commercial vehicle doesn't have to pass the most basic testing.
I still stay in touch with the person who gave me my driver's test.
Really?
We bonded in that 7 minutes.
But you probably passed on the first time.
I did.
I didn't.
Right. They said I was on the best. You didn't?
No, because this wasn't the driving. This wasn't the driving test. Oh my gosh!
Yes. Then you got to go apply again.
In Florida, you can get you go in for your first license at 15, which now to me is shocking that no 15-year-old needs to be driving a car. But at the time, I went for the written test, and I specifically remember one of the questions I failed was, if you pass an exit on the interstate, what's the best thing to do? And I said, back up and go back to the
Did
exit
they laugh
ramp.
Out loud?
No, there was a big, you're not getting your license today. It's very sad.
It was the best thing that ever happened to America.
It was for safety's sake.
Green was kept
See,
off the roads.
I failed. Certain people should fail their licensing exams until they can actually answer the questions correctly.
Who's on your show this week?
So Senator James Lankford is going to be with us. We're going to talk Russia, Ukraine. Is it time for the Senate to drop this sentence package that not only, you know, it doesn't go after just Russia, it's their customers like India, Brazil, China. You got to get their attention somehow. It's not working so far. So will the Senate, they've been waiting for the cue from the president. But man, how often do you get 80 plus senators to agree on anything?
Nothing.
Like never. So they're ready to go. Is the president going to unleash them to do this package?
Here's General Jack. Oh, by the way, is that it?
What's that?
Is that it?
Well, I have somebody else that is overseas that we're trying to confirm. And we're okay. working on logistics. But we're also going to have a legal panel. Turley Dupree, you're going to be with us for this raid this morning on John Bolton's house and all kinds of other legal issues. The big win by the president, the $500 million
You were telling
thing
me before
out.
The show that this Bolton had it coming.
Right. That's exactly what I said. People will believe we actually had that conversation. Don't say
no,
that.
No, okay.
No, but the president said he didn't know anything about it, and that should be the way that that operates. So we'll talk about what comes next.
Right. So he can't wait. He'll get briefed later. Mm-hmm. So John Bolton, I mean, they don't get along, and he's a vicious Mm-mm. commentator. I can't see him. He's the most responsible guy around, having documents that don't belong to him. Mm-mm. So we'll see what happens on that. The other thing was, when you were talking about Ukraine, it reminded me of how different things are now than Alaska. It seems the security guarantees, the big win mm-hmm. for the West. Now they're walking it back. They're saying, we don't want international troops there. Mm-hmm. We don't want any troops there. Mm-hmm. We definitely don't want the U.S. there. Here's Jack Keane, Cut 17.
Well, I think he made a general statement. I don't know what the language was used with Steve Witkoff. But I think he made a general statement to the president when he was with him, you know, dealing with security guarantees being reasonable, something we should discuss. But I think anybody knowing Putin, when you get into the details of this, that's something else again. So listen, it's a negotiated item for sure. But we should put it on the table what security guarantees Ukraine absolutely needs and what the United States should be providing. As part of that multinational force, Ukraine.
I'm not going to tell you who to book, but he'd be a good one.
Love
Shannon,
him.
I'm just wondering if we could send somebody else in with Witkoff. Mm-hmm. I mean, do we have anybody else available? Because he's doing Hamas, he's doing mm-hmm. Iran. That didn't mm-hmm. go well.
He's busy.
Hamas, I'm still waiting for the peace agreement. And now we have a misinterpretation,
mm-hmm. yeah.
except of intentional or not, by the Russians. On what exactly went on. You got to send mm-hmm. a team in there.
Well, but listen, in Alaska, you had the president, you had Witkoff, you had Secretary Rubio. I mean, there were multiple people in right. there. But short of that, does President Trump think there's still any way to actually get this done with Putin? Because he's still bombing Ukraine. And you've got, you know, Sergey Lavrov out there saying like, oh, we're not necessarily doing this meeting. There are many other steps that will have to happen before that happens. So again, it makes it look like Putin, you know, plays footsie with President Trump. Assures him he's going to move forward, and then what he moves forward on is more bombing.
But Trump has a threshold. I don't know if you heard, but he has a temper.
Yes, he does. And he's not happy with Putin and feeling like he's been strung along on this whole thing. So does he allow those the sanctions to kick in? Does he start to play hardball with him in a consistent way?
Since the dossier isn't real, Putin can't have anything over on him. So I'm mm-hmm. realizing that. So, and if it does turn out to be real, then he does have can blackmail him. But mm-hmm. I do think that he's saying, okay, you were about done here. Mm-hmm. We could pack up at one point.
Well, and you've got Democrats who, there's one we're trying to finish booking for Sunday. But there are other Democrats out there saying, you know, the president is getting played by Putin. He's been too easy on him. It's time to drop the hammer. It's time to, like, use every potential lever that we have. And I do think President Trump does not like the idea that Putin is playing him or the optics of it looking like Putin's playing him. And I think that goes a long way in pushing his hand on the sanctions.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, Cut 22.
It is absolutely mind-boggling that Donald Trump continues to be played. An American company hit, and Vladimir Putin has to know where his missiles and drones are going. So for all the bluster and banter, all the finger pointing and rhetoric, Russia's position has barely budged. No ceasefire, no security guarantee, no one-on-one meeting with Zelensky.
Yeah.
And I think it's time for a reckoning, a reality check for Donald Trump.
Look, some of those things that is today, this hour, mm-hmm. this changes by the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And what were they doing before? He's trying to shake the whole thing up and find out where people really stand. Soon, as Mark Thiessen writes, we're going to find out if Putin's ready to play mm-hmm. ball because he's been isolated now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Peggy Noonan writes? That I'll paraphrase, that Putin really freaked out, must have really freaked out seeing all the European leaders there mm-hmm. on Monday. It's the exact opposite of what he tried to do. Mm-hmm. It's break up Europe,
right.
divide them, who had no commitment to defense. Trump was coming in. He tended to be a divisive force in the first term with NATO, demanding they step up, demanding they get rid of Nord Stream 1 and 2. But it's had the opposite effect. He looked like a guy in charge. And
yeah.
I think he could have maybe stopped the process.
Yeah, and the leader of NATO calling Trump daddy. Like, he's the one who's getting right. in there and whipping everyone into shape. So it's a very different relationship this time around than it was the last time. But you're right. I mean, Russia's complaint has been, we didn't want Ukraine to join NATO. We didn't want those extra forces around. And they have, by their own provocations, gotten to the place that they didn't want to be in the middle of this war that they started. So we'll see, though.
Lost Syria, mm-hmm. right? They have two more of their neighbors on their doorstep who are NATO members.
Yeah, they got new NATO members out of this.
So, Shannon, thanks so much for coming in.
What are you going to do this weekend?
I am doing Saturday night. I am going to On the Stage in Dallas, Texas.
Fun.
History, Liberty, and Laughs on live. One Fox Nation is going to stream it.
What's the laughing part?
Me, Will Kane.
Oh, that will be fun.
Yeah, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. It'll be fun. So if you're staying in tonight, if it's going to be date night, why not date watching the
on
stream
Fox Nation.
On Fox Nation?
Okay.
And then to get ready for One Nation Sunday at 10, amongst my guests,
mm-hmm.
Alex Stubb, President of Finland,
mm-hmm.
and Senator Lindsey Graham, who's not President of Finland.
Currently.
Right.
But anything's possible
anything's
in 2025.
Possible.
You just don't know. We'll see what his current title is by Sunday night when
yes.
you have him on.
And it's going to be fun. That's what I promise.
But you always promise me there's going to be a dance segment at some point. I'm still waiting
always running
for
out
that.
Of time.
Yeah, manage. I don't know how that happens. We've got to get you a new line producer who can, you know, get these segments timed out so that we don't lose the dancing
the problem
segment
is
every time.
We have money for the stopwatch. So they'll say in my ear.
What if I got you one?
What? Well, it'll come out of your budget. That's a network
Amazon.com.
All right.
We'll send it over. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye, Shannon.
Bye.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. Tommy Lahren, I got a bonus. She's supposed to be on next segment, but she came here a little early. Tommy Lahren, host of Outkicks. Tommy Lahren is fearless, joins us now. So, Tommy, I thought we had one story, and then we find out we wake up. Ambassador John Bolton's house is being raided. So was his office. And they said they're looking for documents. Yeah. Were you surprised? I saw Kash Patel said, look out, nobody's above the law.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's anything of substance there. For me, I don't think that John Bolton, who's a huge critic and upset that he was let go, I never thought that he'd be a source of documents.
This feels like this has played out before and we're dredging up history. And again, we don't know the reason yet. I guess we got to wait and see. Maybe there's something else there. But I would just say from a perspective of media, it's not great. It's not a great thing to cover. I think it distracts from so many things that the Trump administration
he's
and the
well.
DOJ are doing that I really would rather focus on. It feels like another distraction. And I think the American people are kind of tired of the distractions, too.
Yeah, especially because I was supposed to have an interview with somebody different than the Ambassador Bolton raid. So it's like, instead of that person, why don't you just talk about something for 4 minutes?
Right.
So I'm looking at my own anchor problems. But that's it. Time more for Tommy Lahren in a moment. We come back. Gavin Newsom speaking out. and he thinks he's a hero through this entire process. Tommy used to live in California, knows the real Gavin Newsom, and we'll talk about, is he actually making gains for the Democratic ticket? A poll shows he's first. That's scary.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We got here because the President of the United States is struggling. We got here because the President of the United States is one of the most unpopular presidents in U.S. history. We got here because he recognizes that he will lose the election. Congress will go back into the hands of the Democratic Party next November. Can't win by playing by traditional sets of rules. He plays by no rules. I remind you all the time, it's not the rule of law, it's the rule of Don.
Governor Gavin Newsom trying desperately to be Donald Trump's opponent. Well, a person who lived out there for a while knows Gavin Newsom, and Gavin Newsom's been noticing a lot of your remarks. Tommy Lahren with us now. Tommy, what's your reaction? Does he know the president's not struggling, that his approval rating just went up 5 points in the last week and a half? He passed a big, beautiful bill, the border. Right. So why would he just blatantly just wants to give that impression that we're not paying attention?
Yeah. Well, he views everything in the bubble of California. So is President Trump popular in West Hollywood? No, probably not. In San Francisco? No, probably not, because people think with their emotions there. They don't think necessarily logically or about their own personal safety and security. If they did, they would be supporting President Trump, especially those who are trying to rebuild their homes, by the way, in the Palisades area. Mm-hmm. That the governor doesn't seem too concerned about those folks. But Gavin just desperately wants to be the anti-Trump. And all these Democrats that want to run in 2028, they're trying to out-Trump derangement syndrome one another. Who can be the most anti-Trump? And I think they're also forgetting Trump's not running again.
I know
they think, oh, he could. He's not going to run again. So all this positioning, you guys are wasting your time. You want to sound cool. He's got his little press office dweebs out there sending tweets. And he's also mistaking social media fame for actual popularity and favorability. They're very different things.
So I saw that with this referendum that's going to pass, you know how much it's going to cost? Between
millions.
$200 and $250 million.
Right.
Now, am I wrong? Aren't they in the red? Don't they have this huge budget deficit? Where's he going to come up with this money?
Budget deficit, well, it's, again, it's sacrificing the people of California, who some might be willing to do it because, again, they're emotional. They hate Trump. They got to do whatever they can to fight Trump. The state's already gerrymandered. Let's be honest. There are actually a lot of Republicans in California that are way underrepresented. And a lot of them that have felt way underrepresented, they've gone to Texas, which is why Texas wants to do something different. Or Tennessee, my state. Or, I mean, name it. They've fled to the red states. But this whole thing about it's a Texas trigger, well, they took that out, because even if Texas maps are thrown out, theirs will still move forward. Will the voters vote for that? I have some faith that there will be some level-headed Californians that are going to say, no, this seems like a stunt.
So it's just simple majority will get it on a referendum in November? So
yeah, they're going to have to put it on the ballot.
Yeah, special ballot. Okay, so it's going to get on there if you believe yesterday's vote. So Gavin Newsom was asked by our own Matt Finn, What is your message to Republicans? Cut 29.
They should speak up against their president and these authoritarian tendencies. They should be outraged by what Donald Trump has just done. Cause and effect, outraged by what's just happened with Greg Abbott and the Republicans in Texas.
So Republicans should be mad at Trump.
Yeah. I think that's a kind of a tactic they've tried before, that we should rise up against Trump. I don't know if he's been paying attention for the last 10 years. That's not really where the Republican Party is. When he makes these comments about how unfavorable President Trump is and all that, whatever, the man's been elected twice. He just won the popular vote. All right. So this whole thing about nobody likes Trump, again, you're speaking from an emotional California perspective. The rest of the country is pretty happy with President Trump. And this whole thing about, well, they should look at Texas. These districts that they're looking to create in Texas, they're going to one that's going to be majority black. And then they've got, I believe, two that are going to be majority Hispanic, maybe more Republican Hispanic. But are the Democrats not betting on themselves to win Hispanic voters? I thought that that would have been, you know, maybe in play for them.
You know, it's interesting as I hear that they could squeeze out as many as 8 seats instead of 5 seats. And they might do that if they think that Gavin Newsom's got a shot at doing this. Now, in Indiana, Mike Braun, the governor, former senator, is thinking about doing the same thing. So they do that. I guess Illinois can't do it. I mean, what can Illinois do? You've seen what they've done. New York could try, but Mike Lawler says it's unconstitutional, can't do it. So they could shelve the rules, Kathy Hochul, to look tough and try to redistrict again. But she does need Republican votes to win because at least Stefanik's coming on strong. Yeah.
If they want to play this tit-for-tat game, they're not going to have a lot to work with. They don't have a lot of game pieces left because they've already done it. But again, I think that the people in these states, they gerrymander them more. And these people, these Republicans that are there kind of holding down the fort, just wanting to stay where their families are, I think they'll leave. Right. I really do. I think they're like, you know what? You want to keep doing this to us? You want to keep putting the squeeze on us? We'll go to Texas. We'll go to Tennessee. That's fine. We'll go to Idaho. They will.
Right. I think people will get up and move, especially when you can't balance you can't balance your books. And then you have a situation where you have family now that has moved. So it's not that crazy where you're going to go, well, I'm going to go to Texas. I don't know anyone there. They're getting more and more people traveling across the country. But I also think it's going to be interesting because the market, now they're going to go after the president on the economy. All right. Well, we got the trade deals in. EU just confirmed everything. And then I'm looking at the market now. Because I guess Jay Powell's comments, it looks like he's going to cut rates as expected. We're almost up 1,000 points right now.
Yeah.
So please tell me, Gavin Newsom, where's the president struggling?
Well, and again, they really can't point to anything. It's just how they feel. They don't like what President Trump is doing, and they don't like him securing D.C., and they don't like him, you know, facilitating alligator Alcatraz and getting criminal aliens off the streets. They don't like it. It doesn't make them feel good. So they translate that to, actually, Trump's doing a horrible thing. Well, to you, right, but not to the rest of the country. He won the popular vote. Like, the jig is up, guys. And I would also say to your earlier point, as somebody who left California, and I'm not a Californian, I'm from South Dakota, but the people that I know that have been born and raised in California are born and raised in New York City that have left and gone to a red state. They might have initially thought, oh, I just can't leave. I got family here. Or, I just can't. I've been embedded here. This is my life. Every single one of them that I've talked to said, this is the best decision I have ever made. I'm never looking back.
But you do know that feeling of, should I, right? Should I move to California?
For me.
Should,
yeah. Yeah, not should me. I come for to me, these... I was like, let's get the hell out of California.
Did you know you wanted out of North Dakota?
South Dakota?
South Dakota.
Well, I mean, for me, I left South Dakota when I was 18. I went to school in Las Vegas. South Dakota is not really the market to do what we want to do, right?
So you knew that.
Yeah. But for me, it's more about, it doesn't mean you have to stay in a small red state. It's just, if you live in one of these states and you feel like you are disenfranchised, to use a term from the left, mm-hmm. and you're scared to leave your blue state because you don't know, you know, about leaving your family and everything that you know, you will breathe easier in a red state. Just mark my words. You will enjoy it. You'll get a lot more bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. Your kids won't be indoctrinated at school. You'll still have traditional family values. You will breathe easy.
And you know, when Democrats sit around and wonder why their numbers are going down, a lot of the stats say people have done that already, Tommy.
They have?
Because, yeah, and even younger people like yourself are saying to themselves, I'm going to give the Republican Party a look. Under 45s, they now have more Republicans and Democrats, even though they're also what's growing is independents. The other big story that doesn't get enough heat because everything's behind closed doors is what's happening with the auto pen and the Biden investigation. So Ian Sams, this guy is such a clown. He would come on the air and come on Fox and just start screaming like crazy. We don't know what we're talking about. Joe Biden is great. It was revealed yesterday he's only met with Joe Biden twice and twice on Zoom. What? 4 years. You met with him twice? Yes. Under oath, he decides to answer the questions. Which shows you, I mean, we know the press secretaries have to tell a point of view. I get it. But to flat out lie every day and say that Joe Biden's great, I mean, this, according to James Comer, this is devastating.
It should be devastating. And also, this is a bigger discussion. If the people who are working for you were not allowed to interact with you but a couple of times and a couple of times on Zoom, they were obviously trying to sequester this guy. So we need to know who was doing the sequestration. Was it Jill? Probably. Was it Hunter? Probably. But who was shielding him from everybody?
Was it the visiting angels? Because that's what I think it would take. Here's what James Comer said yesterday after the closed door meeting. They say the transcripts are going to come out. Cut 36.
He communicated with Joe Biden two times. He saw Joe Biden, talked to Joe Biden two times, the entire stint as White House spokesperson. But yet he would every day tweet and issue statements from the podium of the White House, you know, combating everything that we were doing in the Oversight Committee with respect to the investigation, combating the Hur report, saying he didn't know. In fact, Robert Hur spent more time with Joe Biden than Ian Sams.
So to remember these moments, cut 37. Ian Sams defending Joe Biden. Cut 37.
The gratuitous remarks that the former attorney general talked about have naturally caught headlines in all of your attention. They're wrong, and they're inaccurate.
I think also on this issue of the memory, it's been selectively chopped up and edited and sent around because of the confusing way that report was written.
There is no case here. The president is innocent, and that was the conclusion of this case.
When I deal with him, he's sharp, he's asking tough questions, and he's speaking, I think maybe most importantly, speaking passionately about what matters to him.
I think, because I haven't met him.
Yeah. Well, I think he's also trying to cover himself, right? Well, every time I've talked to him, he was just as sharp as a tack, guys, a couple of times that I saw him over the last couple of years. And now I think a lot of these people, I think they're going to sing like canaries, because if they want to get a job in the industry ever again, they're going to have to throw Joe under the bus. They're going to have to throw somebody. They're going to have to say, Jill wouldn't let me go buy him. This was my impression, although it's pretty obvious. I've never talked to Joe Biden in my life,
right,
Ryan, and I could tell you that he was failing, right?
Right. He probably recognize you before it would be Ian Sams. Tommy, go do Outnumbered, the top of the hour.
Yep.
And make me proud.
I will.
You always do. And you showed me a picture right before this, 10 years ago.
10
You're
years
on Fox
ago.
And Friends set. And life's gotten better since.
It has.
All right. Listen, we're going to come back and finish things up. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yeah. So thanks so much, Tommy. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to keep all it here right. for a second, because if you're late, I get in trouble.
Oh.
And you got to go down to Studio M.
I do.
Yes.
I got to make a trek.
So what we were talking about now with the auto pen before, and people saying, you know, what's next with the investigation? There's a lot next. You got on September 5th, Andrew Bates. Who's he? The former White House senior deputy secretary. September 12th, KJP, who left the Democratic Party. Get this. Because the party left her. My goodness. This is a woman who used the fact that she was a black lesbian to keep her job. They tried to get rid of her in midterms. They tried to get Admiral Kirby to take over or somebody else. And she said, no, I'm not going to do it. They tried to get her a job and she wouldn't leave. And now she leaves the Democratic Party. And also, this is going to be the big one. September 18th, Jeff Zients, former White House chief of staff. So he knew everything. He knew what he was walking into. And essentially, that small group of people, that Jeff Zients was one of them, not Ian Sams, obviously, or KJP. The reason why she was so clueless on the stump is because she didn't know the policy and Joe Biden was not in charge of the policy. So September 12th, Jeff Zients is going to be huge. I have a sense that he has got to just say, you know, Ron Klain is the other one. Jeff Zients replaced Ron Klain as the chief of staff, but Ron Klain was still playing a huge role. So he said that he could have gotten another 4 years, but at the same time talked about how he was slipping. So Jeff Zients was sitting right there. I mean, you basically said Joe Biden is more important than the country. So don't forget, I want to see you in Dallas, Texas tomorrow night. And you can watch streaming on One Nation, on Fox Nation. And then don't forget One Nation Sunday night at 10 p.m. amongst my guests, Senator Lindsey Graham, Alexander Stubb, the president of Finland, who is the Trump whisperer, and so much more. Don't move.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. Don't forget to watch One Nation Sunday at 10 o'clock. We're putting together a great show. Senator Lindsey Graham's going to be on it. The president of Finland's going to be on it. It's going to be fantastic. And Anthony Rodi is going to have some fun as we talk about the non-major but important stories. But now it's time to find out if there's a need to know more.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
So here we go. Going into the weekend, how about this? Feel good about the FBI. They have nailed their fourth on the 10 most wanted list, another fugitive. They captured Cindy Rodriguez Singh, who was added to the FBI's top 10 most wanted list in 2023. She was charged with capital murder, unlawful fight to avoid prosecution. Cash Patel, quote, "I give credit to tremendous field work, law enforcement partners, intelligence operatives. It's amazing what they've done. Nobody's talking about it, but the FBI is actually law enforcement again." The NFL ads were 19% more effective than the TV average during the regular 24-25 season. This is why everybody wants to own an NFL as a contract and wants to get on a game. 63% more effective in the playoffs, 243% more effective during the Super Bowl. This according to a company that does that called EDO. Streaming exclusive NFL games delivered 66% stronger ad effectiveness. That is unbelievable. It helps luxury autos, up 42%. Finance, 27%. And 69% for restaurants. So maybe we should advertise our show there. Next, Hulk Hogan's death may be the result of medical malpractice. You know, he died at the age of 71. It stunned everybody, including everybody on this show. They found out in the autopsy that he had leukemia. His daughter, Brooke, raised questions about her father's death, saying that she didn't know he had leukemia as a diagnosis. And she didn't think he knew either. But essentially, Clearwater police say an occupational therapist was present at Hogan's home when he stopped breathing, which is now everything's on lockdown. They did not cremate the body. They're still looking to find out. There might have been something done to lacerate his diaphragm in a previous operation. Next, Andy Reid was reportedly almost hit by gunfire in 2024 while he sat in his office. That was May 4th, 2024, 15 feet from his desk. That is pretty scary. Now they have bulletproof glass around him. Can you imagine if he was losing? Next. Fluminense goalkeeper Fabio on Tuesday claimed the record for most competitive appearances in men's soccer when the Brazilian played his 1,391st game. He made 976 appearances with another club, and Fabio began his career back in 1997. Good job. Quote, "Is it rude to box up leftovers when someone else pays for the meal? It's a father-son fun feud. The 20-year-old man got into a dispute with his dad after asking for a to-go box at a restaurant, dividing dinners at Reddit and prompting a larger discussion about etiquette. For me, it's simple. The answer is yes. If I order it, my right to bring it home."
I think the father's issue was, and again, I'm not saying I'm siding with the father, but the father's issue was the son ordered more than he was able to eat, so he was ordering to just...
It was a scheme.
That's what it the was father's trying. That's why the father
well,
was
upset. Well, that's different. My goodness.
So if you go with somebody and they order, like, they normally would say one lamb chop, but they order two, knowing they're only going to eat one so they can box up the other one and bring it home for another dinner later in the week. That's different.
I don't know. If it's a friend of yours, maybe you might want to
help
them out.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm buying for a friend, I don't care what food they do. That's fine. As long as they're not ordering, 10 hamburgers so they can have, like, two now and save the rest for their, freeze them and have them later in the week.
Yeah, I think lamb chops are overrated, first off, and that's something I've always said. Next, the pop star Lil Nas X was arrested on Thursday morning and was being held at a jail in Los Angeles. The musician, whose real name is Montero Lamar Hill, which is what I call him, was arrested after he ran at officers who had been responding to calls about a naked man of Ventura Boulevard. I don't know, what's worse, finding one or having them charge at you naked? The 26-year-old artist was briefly taken into a hospital for a suspected overdose, but was discharged and taken to a jail a few hours later. I imagine this is one time you'll want the jumpsuit, right? You don't want to go to jail naked. Please, let me snap it up.
Just say, hey, Montero, what are you doing?
Hey, don't forget One Nation, Sunday at 9. Don't forget Saturday at 7:30 on Fox Nation. I want to see you in person, Dallas, Texas. Don't move.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.